We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Wow. Was that actually done at gunpoint?
Yes. You couldn't make me do that for free. There was alcohol involved.
It felt like somebody like had a trained bow and arrow pointed at you and just they said, keep going, Ray. Do the Audacy plug. Now do the app. Now tell everyone how not tedious it is.
Oh, I said it was least tedious.
I know, but it, seriously, like normally station identifications have to come in 10 second chunks. Did that go on like for 45 seconds? That was a long station rejoiner.
Not quite 45, but almost.
Well, it's not like we're going anywhere.
No, but it's got to fit in. It's got to fit into that top of the hour, station identification.
Ah, bite me with that. That's old time radio.
And we are new time radio. Welcome to the future, everyone. And welcome.
You're all doomed. Give up.
Welcome to Steve Kerr, brought to you by Xfinity. Stay connected, stay protected, and entertained. And Coach, thank you for joining us. We have been entertained. What a lead you guys have. What a series so far you find yourself in. Thank you for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
I mean, that's a very enviable position, being up 3-0, a game away from a sixth NBA Finals appearance. When you think about, Steve, what has brought your team back to this moment? Here you are again, playing some of the best basketball of the year at the perfect time. How do you think it happened? Is there a particular moment that you think unlocked all of this to be a possibility once again?
No, I don't think it was one moment. I think it was, really an accumulation of a lot of work, mostly from our players, but also organizationally, over the last couple of years, just making the right moves and players and working with coaches and training staff to develop we just got healthy. The past couple of years the injuries have taken their toll, but I'm really proud of the way the group kept working the last 2 years to put us back in the position we're in now, and the guys are really taking advantage of it.
You have done you do more media, and the obligations increase by the day the further you go. What is the theme, Steve, that you've grown most tired of, either dispelling or just wish people would understand about your team as you politely try to repackage what I'm guessing is the same answer over and over again when you get the same question repackaged at you over and over again? What are you just tired of addressing?
Well, nothing now. I mean, it's when you're winning, it's great. Everybody tells you you're great, and the questions are a lot easier. I suppose if I had to really be transparent, I think the last couple of years, hearing from a lot of experts that we needed to run a lot more pick and roll was a little bit annoying at times, because I know that with this group. The way we play with the ball movement, with the talents of Steph and Clay and Draymond, we've built something really special and sustainable, and it's just great to be able to go back out there and watch these guys play the way they play, because I think it's really effective basketball, and when we're all healthy, it's beautiful to watch.
Given as many players as you've used in this postseason and how many varied ways they've been used, do you sometimes feel like you have more tools than you need, or that maybe it's a hard way to figure out how to use all the things you've got at your disposal in any given game?
Well, I mean, there's never such thing as too many tools, as a coach. I mean, winning is all about talent, and we've got a lot of talent, obviously, you know, the ability to look down the bench and to, you know, to bring in a number of players who are really talented and can impact the game, that's just a huge luxury. So I think the hard thing is sometimes, you know, figuring out which players to use, because we have a lot of guys who are worthy, you know, whether when you start looking down the list, down the bench, we've got a lot of guys who have contributed throughout the year, whether it's Damian Lee or JK, you know, Moses, the rookies, Bielitsa, Damian, I mentioned, all these guys are capable and talented and can help us, but we have to try to decide, you know, which matchups make the most sense for which guys.
Warriors head coach Steve Kerr, can you tell us a little bit more about Moses Moody's inclusion here in your rotation? I think he's played a little bit more than anyone really expected after, you know, how you used him in the regular season. And he said, you know, you got a lot of reviews from your locker room by the guys that matter, saying he's, you know, wise beyond his years. He's earned these minutes. What did he do to earn these minutes, and how does he fit for you in this series?
Well, he's very professional in his approach and really worked hard all season, embraced everything, whether it was the work in the training room and the weight room or his stints in Santa Cruz. He's just very professional, and he's really an ideal 3-and-D guy in the modern game. You know, he's big and strong. He's got a good wingspan, shoots the ball well. And in this series, you know, which is a very kind of switchable series with the way Dallas is playing, we need a guy like Moses out there who can switch and make shots and make smart plays when they start doubling Steph. So he's been a good fit.
If you were the sort to save up I told you so's, and I don't know if you are or not, maybe you are secretly, but how many would you have saved up for people who wanted to tell you about Kevon Looney or Andrew Wiggins?
You know, I think, I mean, you guys know I've always been Kevon's biggest fan, and he's just been so rock solid for us over the years, and I think the hard part for people out there is you know, they see the games on TV and that's it. But, you know, being a great team has a lot to do with what happens in the locker room, how guys interact with one another, the leadership, the internal leadership that you need. And, you know, Loon has been such a big part of that the last couple of years, especially as we've transitioned into this era where we're trying to bring along these young guys. And so Loon is a big part of our foundation. And then I think with Wiggs, you're really getting a look at why you have to have, you know, big two-way players. And we knew this from going to the finals 5 straight years. You know, you get to the playoffs, it's survival out there defensively. And you have to have, you know, guys who can take on the physical toll of guarding the world's best players. And so the trade for Wiggs was all about that, all about his two-way ability. And what's been great is just to see his development, to see him embrace everything that's come his way, every challenge. And I think he's playing the best basketball of his life right now, and we absolutely need it going against Luka Doncic.
It's a development I don't think anyone really saw coming, maybe other than you and your coaching staff. We almost have a two-way Loon going at this point. The way that he's been able to contribute offensively, he's averaging 13 points here in the Western Conference Finals. Did you expect him to be as much of a golden garbage man as he's really turned into for you? I mean, it feels like he is giving you double what you could even, as his biggest champion, have expected from him offensively.
Well, he's gotten a lot better the last couple of years as a passer, and he's never been an athletic guy, so his finishing around the hoop is more dependent on the opponent, you know, than it is himself. Although I will say I think his footwork has improved, his left hand has improved. So, you know, he's worked hard at it and he's gotten better with it. But in this series in particular, you know, Dallas plays a lot of small 3-point shooting lineups, and so there's room underneath the basket, not a ton of shot blocking. So he's able to maneuver his way in there and find some buckets.
I have a contingent of listeners who is trying to hold my feet to the fire for previewing Luka Doncic in terms of the glowing review that I gave him, to kind of let Warriors fans understand what the Warriors would be up against in just dealing with Luka Doncic alone. Everyone sees now your 3-0 lead and is trying to tell me I'm wrong. Luka is overrated and is not ready. And I just think that that's absurd. Are you watching what this man is doing kind of by himself? And I would think that maybe you could address this even better than I can, since you have seemingly cooked up more different defenses to slow that young man down than you have thrown out against any player I think I've ever seen you coach against, LeBron James included.
Yeah, we're trying to throw a lot at him because that's how good he is. You just can't let him get into a comfortable rhythm because he just shoots any shot he wants. You know, he's got the step back three, he's got the fadeaway mid-ranger, and he can get to the rim using his strength and leverage to create shots at the basket. So he is an absolute handful, just a brilliant young player, and our defense is really geared around him and his talents, and then obviously they surround him with really good three-point shooting. Got a couple other good playmakers with Brunson and Dinwiddie. So we're just trying to do our best to limit what they do, knowing that they're very capable of doing what they did in Game 2 and making, you know, 23s or whatever it was. So it's a very difficult job. Wiggs is doing a ton of work trying to stay in front of Doncic and he's it's funny. Like, I thought he did a great job last night, and Doncic had 40 points. So, it's one of those things where some guys are just so good that you can only do so much. But as long as what we do is enough to win the game, that's the only thing that we care about.
In your wildest, most drunken dreams, would you have imagined that you guys would be as dominant on the boards in this postseason as you have been, given the fact that you're supposed to be too small?
Well, remember, we had a good rebounding season. We were, I think, in the top 10 in rebounding percentage. I think it was a surprise against Memphis, given that Memphis was the number one rebounding team in the league this year and has a massive front line and athletic wings. So that was surprising to me. But all in all, we've been a good rebounding team all year. And so I think the fact that it's continued in the postseason is... It should not be a shock.
Steve, do you and Bob need to trade for a big at the deadline?
Oh, boy. Yeah, maybe that was the question. That was what I should have answered when you asked that question at this interview.
Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. There's been much made of and even a significant fine levied against the Dallas Mavericks for their bench behavior. What do you think of their bench's behavior, and at what point does a fine become unnecessary and, like, maybe a technical foul be assessed on that?
Yeah, I mean, energy is great. I mean, I love seeing benches up, cheering their guys on, talking trash. That's all part of the game, but it just can't interfere with the game, and it did in Game 2 when Steph passed the ball to Theo Pinson wearing a white shirt and who was, you know, holding his arm up, calling for the ball. And that, you know, that crossed the line. Everything else is fine. You love seeing players engaged. I don't know that I'd want to sit in the seats behind the bench. That wouldn't be great. But, I got no problem with it, like I said, as long as it's not interfering with the game.
Speaking of down in front, the beer vendor that tripped Curry right before the half, is that breaking the vendor code?
It reminded me of the old Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Larry David.
Shaq. Yeah. Yeah, that was, the access that everybody has now it seems like everyone is just closer and more intimate than ever before in terms of just being on top of the game, whether it's actual, you know, people 2 feet away from the action, or, you know, getting interviewed during the middle of the game, or having the microphone in the huddle, or a camera in the locker room. Well, it's just, the way we sell the game and promote the game, it's very, very intimate. And most of that is really good because it provides an incredible experience for the fans. But I agree with Steph. Just wait till halftime to serve the guy the beer, and I'm sure he'll be fine.
Are you upset at all that he didn't order one for you on his way off the floor?
100%.
Toward that end, though, I mean, it does seem as though fans are being allowed to sit closer than they used to, and that sort of in-person, bar service is now, almost, ordinary in most NBA arenas. Is there any movement that you know of, either to try to move those seats back or take out a row? Well, I know not take out a row. That's money. That would never happen. But would you want to see the Players Association ask for just maybe another couple of feet around the floor so that Stephen Curry isn't jumping over the guy with an ice tumbler just to get down court?
I don't think so. I think it's fine the way it is. I don't think there's been much precedent in terms of injuries. In fact, remember last year, Steph got hurt in Houston because there weren't any fans at half court, and he sort of backed up, expecting to be held up, and he ended up landing on the pull away stands behind the area where the fans would normally sit. But because of the pandemic configurations of the arena, there was nobody there, and he ended up getting hurt there. So I'm fine with the current way it's formatted.
It's amazing how much we have wiped from our memories of those 2 years of Warriors basketball based on what we're getting from you and your team now, Steve. And here we are once again. I can't imagine how many times Phil Jackson in the playoffs would go 16 minutes into an interview without getting a bona fide question about his best player playing in the series. And here we are, about 16, 17 minutes into this interview. And we haven't even really asked you a serious question about Steph Curry. And I think that is just reflective of the unselfish, just egoless, true superstar that he's become. He is the ultimate winner. He's one of the ultimate winners in the history of this league. Can you tell how much fun he is having now on this run? And did you think that he really thought it might get back to this as soon as it did?
It's easy to tell that Steph is having fun. I mean, I think that's one of his most appealing characteristics that fans latch onto, is just his joy, his love for the game. And he's also one of the world's great competitors, which maybe people don't see as much of. So when you combine those two things, you've got the perfect playoff performer, because that's that's what guys live for. Are built that way. So Steph is just thrilled to be back. He is playing at such a high level, doing everything we need from him, night in and night out, leading us in such an incredible manner. Just wonderful to see him doing his thing out there.
Is this a night where you watch Miami and Boston, or is this a night where you take the night off and just think quietly about your team without looking at any video and just unwinding?
No, I watch. I'll be watching for sure, and probably have a beer and have some dinner and think about our team later after the other game.
How many beers do you have when you think about your team?
Now it's getting too personal.
Really, Ray is obsessed with your personal bar tab here. I have got a question, Steve, if you'll indulge me, because I cooked up this theory. As the basketball world is just getting to see the Warriors again and how you guys play so unselfishly, and the ball movement and the motion offense that is so rarely run at the professional level, and that's why it feels like so many teams are unaccustomed to seeing what it is you do. Is there some Bob Knight in there? I mean, it feels like I'm watching some tic-tac-toe interior passing that might have been, Alan Henderson and Damon Bailey. And it just feels like the offense is so motion-based. I'm watching some old Indiana Hoosiers basketball. I'm wondering if you if there isn't any tape that you have pulled out recently to demonstrate motion offense, because it feels like that's what you're throwing at. I mean, it's a pure, and I don't say this word negatively, it's a college motion offense built on player movement, getting to a space, vacating space, everyone having the right spacing. It's gorgeous what you're doing again.
Well, I appreciate that. I think we have an offense that is definitely unique. In no way, shape, or form was it informed by Bob Knight or Indiana. I can tell you that.
I'm projecting, aren't I?
you may be showing your Indiana roots a little bit. But the offense comes from kind of the combination of influences that I've had in my career. A lot of triangle stuff from Phil Jackson, some San Antonio actions, just kind of side-to-side ball movement from Pop. When Alvin Gentry came here, he brought some of the actions that he and Mike D'Antoni ran in Phoenix. And so there's an influence there from all those people, but trying to tailor it to the modern game with all the three-point shooting and the high screen and roll. But the biggest thing is just the personnel that we have. We've got Steph and Clay, two of the greatest off-ball shooters on Earth ever. We got Draymond Green, who's a natural point center, point forward, and we got a bunch of guys who know how to pass and play. So it's, the reason it's rare in the NBA is because there's so much turnover, roster-wise, coaching-wise. So I think our continuity is just really crucial to our style. And but it's mostly based on personnel and the talent that we have, which we're just incredibly blessed to throw out there every single night.
Can we get an Otto Porter Jr. update from you, please?
Yeah, he told me he was feeling okay today. The X-ray was negative yesterday. I would say he's doubtful for tomorrow. You know, we want to be careful. We'll wait and see how things go at shoot around, but we want to make sure Otto's good, going forward. And if we can give him a couple of days, that makes some sense.
Well, look, Coach, I think we know where this is going. We don't know how it ends, but I think we know where this is going. And either way, what a ride you're taking us on once again. It's been so enjoyable. It's been fun. It's been pretty. At times it's been ugly. It is just, the NBA is fantastic. And you guys are the best show in the NBA. There's no doubt about it. Thank you very much for taking us on this ride again.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. And trust me, I'm enjoying the ride just as much as everybody. And no better place to do it than in the Bay Area, because people love basketball in the Bay. We feel that, and we've got a great home court advantage, great following, and it's what a pleasure it is just to be part of it all.
Thank you so much. Steve Kerr, here on 95.7 The Game. Awesome stuff. Generous with his time, as always. And look, I mean, no reason to take any victory laps before these end in victory, but we know where this is going. The Golden State Warriors are going back to the NBA Finals, Ray. And it's extraordinary considering where they were in December.
Well, and let's be honest. They have been able to play two vulnerable teams in Denver and Dallas. The real achievement was dealing with Memphis, because that's the one where all of a sudden you saw, you know what? This team that's supposed to be too small can rebound with the best of them. Because Memphis was the best of them. With Denver, they just didn't have enough players. And now with Dallas, again, they don't have enough players. And that's what we're seeing more than anything else. It's Luka Doncic on an island. And one of the things that Steve Kerr would never say, but is sort of there in the background, is one of their most successful things when they've got the ball is they're using Luka Doncic as a guy who's not yet a fully formed defender, and they're working him. Kevin O'Connor had a reference in his story in The Ringer today about it, where They love to make him the pick-and-roll defender, and they're getting more than a point of possession out of that.
It's like what they did to Chris Paul.
Yeah, except that, you know, Luka Doncic is 13 years younger, and, you know, of his many gifts, the two things he does not yet have fully formed is being in exceptional shape and being an exceptional defender. Two things that he can do as he gets older.
An exceptional interview from Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game. We got more for you when we come on back. Don't you move a muscle. Damon and Ray here. We're brought to you by the Northern California Toyota dealers.
Now back to Damon and Ratto. Brought to you by BMW Fairfield on 95.7 The Game.
Well, well, well. If you're looking for all the best Warriors content, you need to text the word Warriors to 20357. You hit the subscribe button. Boom. Everything we do that is basketball goes right there, including an outstanding interview with Steve Kerr that we just wrapped up. He was great as always. We will get back to the Warriors and where they are in the Western Conference Finals in just a little bit. But there are a few other things, right, that actually happened, will be happening today, tonight, and happened over this weekend that I think we need to talk about just a bit of here on today's show, because by tomorrow it will be old news. Can we talk about how the San Diego Padres just came in here and pantsed the San Francisco Giants? I mean, man, that was an awful lot of Padres at the ballpark this weekend.
Yeah, they boxed their ears, and now the team that was half a game out of first is now five games back, and given the way the Dodgers and Padres have been playing, it's going to be a while before they catch, you know, cut into that.
Yeah, plenty of time left, but boy.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm just saying. Yeah. In the short term, unless they start getting some injuries, I think they're going to be running for a while.
Manny Machado is going to find himself, he keeps playing like this, right in the middle of the MVP conversation. He had four extra base hits yesterday. He hit home run number 8 in a one-run game on Saturday, and on Friday night, he went 3-for-5 with a double and an RBI. He is hitting a major league best 374, which might as well be 450 in modern baseball, Ray, and he's got the third best OPS in the game. He is just off to a monster start, and if you like glove work, he's got an awful lot of that too.
And they're doing this without Fernando Tatis.
Exactly. He's spectacular, and I know he's unlikable and, you know, down with Machado is how an awful lot of fans feel about him. But boy, he is playing really good baseball right now. The streaky season continues for the San Francisco Giants. The Mets are in town tonight. Davis Peterson against Alex Cobb is your pitching matchup. And you want to talk about streaky? Look, the Giants have had a 6-game winning streak. They've had 2 5-game winning streaks baked into this season. They've also now had a 5-game losing streak, and a 4-game losing streak is what they're looking at before the Mets take the field tonight. So it is kind of all or nothing for them this year. They either show up and really, really play well against a team, or they lay down and die, and they laid down and died 3 out of 4 times the last time they saw the Mets at Citi Field.
Yeah, the Mets are a bear.
Pitchers get hurt, they still remain a bear.
Yeah, well, the thing is, one, they're not going to be threatened by anybody else in their division, so they probably are going to be safe just to make the playoffs. But secondly, they do churn up outs. They don't let teams, you know, run up a number on them. They don't have to work their bullpen very hard. They're probably the team with the best pitching in baseball right now. And assuming they can stay healthy, that's going to stay that way, because I don't know that there's going to be a lot of pitching available come the trade deadline to make anybody that much better.
So step right up and meet the Mets, greet the Mets. They are here tonight. There is another team in New York, though, that is getting a lion's share of attention around Major League Baseball today, not because of what they're doing on the field, but what Josh Donaldson said to Chicago's Tim Anderson of the White Sox, where Josh Donaldson has now been suspended for inappropriate comments made to Tim Anderson this past weekend. He was also fined an undisclosed amount. He'll be appealing the punishment, which means he's going to play while that appeals process is completed. But Major League Baseball is suspending Josh Donaldson for one game because he referred to Tim Anderson as Jackie. Probably not Gleason.
No, we know what it was a reference to. It was a reference to Jackie Robinson. And Josh Donaldson, apparently, from what I've been able to read, was not a well-liked guy when he was at the White Sox. And so, you know, presuming that he knows guys better than they think he knew them is probably part of this. As for the suspension, if it was that egregious, they should have suspended him for longer. This just seems like a PR exercise more than anything else. I mean, if Tony La Russa says, yeah, it was a racist thing to say, you know, he knows his clubhouse as well as anybody, and he knows the dynamics therein. So it's not like he made a soft landing place for Donaldson. And it makes me think that baseball just wanted to get this off their schedule. And now I saw today that Donaldson is out with COVID, and apparently the Yankees are now facing a full COVID blow-up.
Seems to be happening around the world of sports lately. Major League Baseball, in the statement about the suspension, said today, regardless of Mr. Donaldson's intent, the comment he directed towards Mr. Anderson was disrespectful and in poor judgment. And look, I'm not a language police guy. I'm not easily offended. But there can be little interpretation left to what Josh Donaldson really meant there. Jackie Robinson, and to call him just Jackie is code word for, all right, black guy. That's what he's saying. So that's it feels like there is certainly something there that is between Donaldson and Tim Anderson, and it boiled over into whether the consequences were meant to land heavily or softly. Wrong thing to be saying in 2022. And Josh Donaldson's reputation as a hard-to-deal-with red ass started in Toronto. I mean, it's followed him everywhere he's gone, including a short stint with the A's, who, by the way, we can tell you, won 1-3 down in Anaheim over the weekend, and they are 3-7 now in their last 10. They're at the Mariners tonight, starting a series up in Seattle. Real quickly, NFL news, Ray. The first 49ers OTA practice today, tomorrow, we're going to let the media in, and we will be overrun with nonsensical OTA reports, which I know you...
That's a redundancy.
You just love more than anything else. So I'll also let you know that along with that happening, the Commanders are buying $100 million worth of land in Virginia. Daniel Snyder wants a new stadium. I think most of us would like him out of the NFL under the category, that guy sucks. But he has just made a significant investment. And I've seen artist renderings. And much like Levi's Stadium, this thing's like 50 miles away from Washington, D.C. There isn't a single person who is currently going to Commanders football games who doesn't look at a 2 to 3 hour drive based on how traffic is around there if this were to happen.
Yeah, this sounds like a leverage play more than it does an actual plan to build a stadium in Virginia. He wants to apparently scare the people who run the District of Columbia into giving them land and money to build a stadium there.
He's pulling a Cavill?
I wouldn't say...
Pulling a Vegas Cavill?
Pulling a Fisher. Because, again, I'm not going to slander the puppet when the puppet master is standing so close.
Okay.
But I don't see how they get anything that helps them by being 40 miles away from it. Well, actually 32 miles away from everything. In fact, there was an earlier report that they were going to be in a city that was like 5 minutes further out, and they had to race in and correct that. Oh, no, it's only a half an hour away from D.C. Well, that's no difference at all.
Well, as the crow flies or as the wheel turns.
Because, as the car idles.
Yeah, there is nothing in D.C. that's a half an hour away by car, and I'm talking about like White House to Washington Monument.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where he's planning to get the money, because I saw some mock-ups, and it looks like your standard $2 billion football stadium, and I don't know that he wants to spend $2 billion. I think he's looking for money for land at a place where I don't see a lot of freewheeling money floating around unless he thinks the government of the Virginia state government is going to take care of him the way Nevada took care of Mark Davis. And I sure don't see that.
From the 510 on the Xfinity mobile text line, someone says, Damon, come on, my guy. Tim Anderson called himself the new Jackie Robinson. That's where this stems from. You know, Tim Anderson can call himself whatever he wants. You know, there's a lot of black guys who use the N-word, but it's off limits. You know, a buddy of mine once said, here's the deal, white America. When it comes to the N-word, you're not allowed to say it. Take the deal. That's pretty good advice. Well, you want to be that person who sticks their neck out and feels comfortable saying that? You go right ahead. I bet you get a one-game suspension, at least.
Yeah, you don't get to presume you have a relationship that well with a guy unless you know that you have a relationship with a guy that would allow that.
Well, it's like
not the N-word. I'm talking about Jackie.
Well, it's like Mike Schilt insulted over at first base for the Giants. Yeah, Antoine Richardson. And he basically said, hey, you, mother bleeper. Like, even though you didn't intend that to offend him racially, it clearly did. It clearly did. Again, it's not just how it's received. It's not just how it's sent. It's how it's received these days. Welcome to modern, little micro outrages all over the microaggressions, if you will. Oh, God, I hate that term. But it's out there. So there you go. There is your daily outrage. I hope you enjoyed. When we do come on back, we have much more Warriors basketball to talk about this afternoon because they are in position to close out the Dallas Mavericks tomorrow night. And that would set up a really nice layoff before the start of the NBA Finals. We can tell you, as we look back in on the Eastern Conference Finals, that Marcus Smart is ruled out for the Celtics tonight. Jason Tatum and Robert Williams will be playing. Tyler Herro ruled out for Miami, but everyone else is going to go for the Heat. So there you go. What you need to know about the Eastern Conference Finals, which will be tipping off in a matter of moments here. We'll be back in a matter of moments as well. Damon and Ratto brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to Damon and Ratto, brought to you by BMW Fairfield on 95.7 The Game.
The one and only other thing we have to tell you in terms of NFL-related news today before we get back to the NBA and the Golden State Warriors is that the Arizona Cardinals will be on Hard Knocks this season. It's the first time that they have been featured on the show. And I got to say, Ray, the show isn't quite what it used to be. Will probably never be what it was designed to be again if teams get to control all the, images and likenesses that come out of this, what once was for a minute there, like a raw behind the scenes look. It's very much, catered to that team's preferences these days. But I'll tell you, there's just an inkling of an interesting story to tell because Kyler Murray is one heck of a story from being a baseball prospect to being a quarterback to being the number one pick in the draft. Like, you could tell that story, I'd think, in a very interesting fashion, and I hope that HBO does. What you're probably not going to get is the fact he seems very out of love with the Arizona Cardinals this offseason.
Yeah, I have a feeling that's not going to get told, and I have a feeling that everything else will be sanitized as well because the Raiders showed everybody else in football the template for how to do that show now. Which is
how to ruin that show now.
Well, basically, yeah, which is basically nobody gets to see anything we don't want them to see. We're not going to give them a look behind the curtain because all we've got is curtains. So I don't get your hopes up, is all I'm going to say. I mean, Kyler Murray may very well be a very interesting story, but if it's going to be told, it's not going to be told in this show. It'll be told by somebody else who's got either a better freedom of movement or somebody who's got better sources than officials from the team.
Also, Should let you know, since it's a major in everything, Justin Thomas won the PGA Championship over the weekend. His second major championship. He also won the PGA back in 2017. At one point, he's 8 shots back. He started the round 7 shots back. He fell to 8, and he ends up winning because there were a lot of bad Sundays around him to make that possible. It feels like he's won more than 2 titles already. It really does. He has won, I believe, 15 times in the PGA Tour. And this is why it feels like he's been around longer than he has. Do you realize that Justin Thomas is now the 5th player since World War II to win 15 tournaments before the age of 30? He joins Jack, Tom Watson, Tiger, Rory, and San Francisco's own Johnny Miller. I mean, that's pretty elite company for Justin Thomas.
Yeah, he's one of the 25 top 5 best players in golf.
That's a perfect way to
say
it.
I mean, it's because they come and they go very quickly while most of the golf establishment waits for Tiger Woods to make his next comeback. And man, did he look old and infirm in that tournament. And I'm not trying to, you know, bury him, but that's the first time I've really seen sort of the ravages of the car accident, because he was laboring just to get down fairways.
Yeah, he looked in worse condition than he did at the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, everybody would admired him for how quickly he came back, but maybe that's the price, is that he's not fully healed yet. And maybe he never will be. I mean, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know. But yeah, as that tournament went on, he started fading from view. And when he finally pulled out after that 79, you know, you felt more relief than anything else, because watching him try to do that again Sunday would have been brutal.
Yeah, it was the right thing to do, and he knew it. Again, just speaking of your daily outrage machine cranking up sports headlines, are you guys going to talk about what happened to Mark Haynes, or did I miss it, is a question I'm getting on the Xfinity mobile text line. I got to tell you, I didn't really know what happened to Mark Haynes until I sort of reread this morning what happened to Mark Haynes. And essentially, he called Steph Curry a front runner?
That's right.
He called Steph Curry a front runner on a Spaces, which, by the way, you and I are doing tonight, Lucas. You and I got Spaces. What time tonight?
8 o'clock. I've heard that that's when you want to do it. We can do this on air. When do you want to do it?
We're going to do it at 8 p.m.
Okay.
Spaces. The Spaces.
See you then.
Call it the D. Bruce VIP party. It'll make people want to come in.
Thank you for the invite.
I really don't even want to talk about, you know, Giants. Do a Giants postgame? No, we'll just talk about whatever. It'll be like a open-ended, hey, how are you? So that's what we're going to do tonight, 15, 20 minutes max. It's a freaking Monday, for goodness sakes. Anyways, the Spaces clearly gets people in trouble, got Mark Haynes in trouble, and he said that Steph Curry was a front runner, which I don't know why people got really offended by that, because the Warriors are a fantastic front runner. They get up huge, and by the fourth quarter comes around, they're so far in front that the night is over. I mean, that's what front runner means. Front runner has been used as such a disparaging remark that it's really not, I guess it could be used disparagingly, but I don't think he was using it that way. It's like calling Tiger Woods a front runner. Tiger Woods is golf's ultimate front runner. Nobody gets a, you know, 3-round lead and holds on to it quite like him.
It's the idea that, according to Warriors Twitter, I've never actually heard this argument, but apparently a lot of Steph haters say that he doesn't like play his best until the Warriors are up by a good amount in the fourth quarter. I've never understood that. If you watch him night in, night out, that doesn't make any sense at all. But apparently Steph haters do that. That's an argument against him and his greatness and his place on whatever legacy lists. And I guess Mark Haynes used that in an argument. And someone asked him, was he front-running tonight? And he said, yeah, Steph was definitely front-running tonight after game 2.
Again, I don't understand what front-running is, because without Steph's effort, they lose game 2, right?
These are the arguments that make me crazy, because the idea that the Warriors build big leads without his participation seems nuts to me.
It's insane.
And secondly, the Warriors, less than any other team, are reliant on only one guy. And this series should have shown that. And the series before that should have shown it too. You know, the fact that, I mean, Curry is still their best player. But the idea that if there is a strict hierarchy with this team means you have not paid attention for 8 years.
Right. You don't know what it is they're doing here in the first place. And look, there is quite a bit of Warriors disinformation. One of the biggest propagandists of what the Warriors aren't is Nick Wright. And Nick Wright will be joining us on Wednesday, I believe at 4 o'clock. You know, one of the things I hear Nick and other people on his network lean on at times is that, well, Steph Curry's never been named NBA Finals MVP. I mean, I guess you're just going to discount the two consecutive MVPs that he won, and now we are prioritizing an NBA Finals MVP as a more significant career accomplishment. And that just to me is absurd, especially when you have this to throw into that soup, that Steph Curry is the only player in NBA history to average 26 points and 6 assists in the finals on a winning team and not been named Finals MVP. And he's done that 3 different times. I mean, 3 different times he has put up numbers that have always qualified a player to be Finals MVP. But on 3 different occasions, they wanted to give one to Iguodala first time around, even though LeBron went ungodly statistic on him. And then they gave it to Durant because Durant hit 2 huge shots in LeBron's eye and was magnificent. Let me tell you what's also about to happen, Ray. If the Warriors do win an NBA title, there will be a rush to try to diminish what Kevin Durant meant to the team when he was on the team. We're not going to do that. We're going to sit back and belly laugh that Kevin Durant made the decision to leave this, but I'm not going to try to undercut what he meant to the Warriors when he was here. That'd be ridiculous.
To me, whether you're the Finals MVP or not, is of supreme indifference to most people. It is not the first time anybody ever made a huge deal of that award was when Iguodala got it, because it was the first time somebody had gotten it for playing defense, and people couldn't figure out, well, this is an outrage. You know, I mean, just other than that, nobody has ever paid that much attention to it. So, you know, I think getting the 3 rings and the parades probably matter more than a statuette that he would put in the back of his trophy case. You know, it's surely less important based on the construction of this team than the 2 MVPs.
Well, and what we have here is a media that wants to kind of, you know, tell the story their way. And when the story doesn't go their way, the only recourse they have left is to move the goalposts.
Well, but it's using an irrelevant argument. I mean, the fact is the Warriors don't win any of those finals without him. They don't get to any of those finals without him. You know, I mean, just, you know, say what you will about Durant. You know, that too was an ensemble team, and they all needed each other to make all that work. So what's the argument here? The argument is this is supposed to be an individual sport, when in fact the Warriors have been proving year after year that no, it isn't.
Well, it might be in other cities. It might be with other stars, but not here.
Well, but that's the only place he's played. So that's the definition you apply to him. If Dallas was up 3-0 and they had the same roster, then I'd be willing to listen to somebody tell me one guy can carry a team by himself, because that's almost never happened. You know, it's happened a couple of times here or there, but for the most part, you have to have people with you. And it's been Curry's great fortune that the players who have been with him are in many ways equal to him in their own particular specialty. You know, whether it be Durant, whether it be, you know, Thompson spot up shooting, whether it be Green as the Swiss Army knife. I mean, go down the list. The Warriors are basically a fist and a glove. That's how they've won as much as they have. That's how they're winning now. So the idea that Stephen Curry individually hasn't done enough is preposterous to me.
It's insane.
Because it just misapplies what it is that makes this team work.
Right. Well, it's the same crowd that wanted to tell you that the Warriors were wasting Steph Curry's prime, which is nonsense, because in that man's prime. They went to five consecutive NBA finals. That's really not wasting anything.
And beyond that, I don't know that they planned to have Kevin Durant and Klay Thompson get hurt. You know, I don't think that's waste. I think that's bad luck.
I think it is too. And I think that you have to factor it into where this all might have gone should all of them stayed healthy, which means if they really do this, if they win four more times before the season is over, they're going to be champions. And that is going to, I think, almost usurp what the Niners did in terms of pure historical dynastic excellence. But we'll worry about that a little bit later on. That's a bridge that's a little bit too far to even see from here. So we'll wait for that story before we tell that story. And
yeah, don't peek before the 21st of June.
And we do, by the way, have a brand new Ray Ratto Top of the Hour station identification that I know you'll all enjoy. Here it is.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.